hearings on all of the public employee retirement system bills that are in front of us today. And that may be all the business that we do this morning. So with this, I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 54, Senate Bill 108, Senate Bill 109, Senate Bill 110, and Senate Bill 111, and ask Steve Delaney and Paul Cleary to come forward. And in the meanwhile, I'd ask Ms. Harris to give us a brief overview of each of these bills.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate, I'll just say at the outset that we have a statement of no fiscal impact and no revenue impact on all of these bills. Senate Bill 54 modifies the date commencing the payment of certain PERS benefits available to a member upon the death or divorce of the member's spouse. Senate Bill 108 clarifies certain statutory definitions in the PERS chapter, particularly inactive member, and it modifies provisions governing the individual account program. It also would allow PERS members who are 55 years or younger but who have accrued 30 years of, or more of service to receive individual account program benefits on a monthly or other installment basis rather than in a lump sum. Senate Bill 109 amends ORS 238.455. It allows the PERS board to fix the interest rate that would be applicable to retroactive payments to PERS members who are entitled to, well, retroactive payments that occur as a result of an underestimate on the part of the PERS board. Senate Bill 110 invalidates PERS members' beneficiary designations upon termination of membership. Senate Bill 111, last but not least, clarifies the relationship between the PERS, between the public employment retirement system and the Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan for purposes of federal income tax qualification.
Thank you. Welcome to your Senate Rules Committee.
Madam Chair, member of the committee, I'm Paul Cleary, Executive Director of PERS, and with me is Steve Delaney, our Deputy Director and our Legislative Coordinator. We appreciate your consideration of these bills today. These are all bills that were introduced at the request of the PERS Board and have gone through a review from our Legislative Advisory Committee. I think it's really appropriate that we're appearing before you today on the same day that the Oregon Groundwater Association has got drilling rigs set up outside the Capitol here. Those folks certainly try their best to dig deep holes, whereas we're trying our best to fill a deep hole. You might recall that 2 years ago we were staring into about a $15 to $17 billion unfunded liability hole. I'm pleased to announce that as a result of PERS reform, improving market conditions, and prudent decisions of the new board that provided for in the reform legislation, that that hole has now been closed to less than $2 billion.
Wow.
We were looking at an unfunded liability of somewhere in the range of 70%. We only had, in other words, 70 cents for every dollar of benefit that we were supposed to be paying in the future. We'd close that with the pension obligation bond proceeds as well to about 96%. We now have somewhere, we've got $1.2 billion in reserves set aside with a preliminary decision to set aside another $600 million or so. So we're now working with a net, if you will, that should help us cushion some of the risks that we're exposed to both in the marketplace and in the courtroom.
And finally, could you put that in context for us in terms of other public pension systems across the United States? 96% funded, is that considered great? Is that unusual? Can you paint a picture out for us?
Madam Chair, that's considered pretty well funded. If you look at the private sector, I believe for the Fortune 100 corporations in 2004, their average funded ratio for their defined benefit plans was about 84%. And I think that in the public sector, you're probably looking in the mid-80s to mid-90s. You try to, you know, approach 100%, but you don't want to go over it. And certainly, you know, we've seen major improvement as a result of that. Now, obviously, we still have some risks out there, and one of the biggest risks is the court decision that we anticipate sometime soon, and then we're always exposed to market risk. But I just wanted to bring that up to make sure that the committee was aware that conditions have improved dramatically. We still are filling some of that hole, though. And as a result, we've had increase in employer rates to do that. We've tried to moderate those by phasing them in over two bienniums, and we're looking at other actions as well, because we're certainly sensitive to the fact that we've got to have a retirement system that wears well for our members, their employers, and Oregon's taxpayers. We're here before you today not with any remodeling, with truly what I call housekeeping-related bills. Since they go into a lot of detail, I brought my trusted sidekick along here, who's the expert in the detail of our programs.
I just wanted to say thanks to both of you for your great work. We're very pleased to be in the position we're currently in. It really means a lot to many members of the legislature, I know, and we really appreciate your work. So thank you. Other comments? Mr. Cleary? Senator Shields?
I appreciate that, Madam Chair, but I think certainly the legislature needs to take a lot of credit for it, because a number of the systems that are still struggling haven't gotten out ahead of the curve like this legislature was willing to do.
Thank you. Mr. Delaney?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record again, Steve Delaney, Deputy Director of PERS. The first bill in front of you, Senate Bill 54, again, as Director Cleary indicated, these really are housekeeping. They've gone through the advisory committee that is made up, as my testimony indicates.
Could you talk a little bit about the advisory committee and how that came into being for
Absolutely.
Our members that are new to this issue, please?
At the end of the 2003 session, the legislature directed that the PERS board itself be available to give advice to the legislature regarding benefits. And to assist the board, House Bill 2020 directed that an advisory committee be created to assist the board in looking at legislative concepts. A committee was formed of 14 members. You have the membership on the first page of my testimony here. The statute directed that it be evenly divided between management and labor, and so we've worked with the primary groups that have often been involved in PERS legislation and are able to bring them together. They formed at the start of 2004. We contacted the different organizations. They provided names as to who they'd like to represent them on this committee. The board approved that. We had four meetings through 2004 where we reviewed various concepts that were being brought forward as possible PERS board bills. The five that you have in front of you are the ones that reach consensus with that group. I want to specify that you'll see in my discussions here that I indicate no one on the committee had opposition to the bill. You may not have had warm huggies on these necessarily, but there was no opposition to the five bills that have moved forward to you today.
Thank you. And my understanding of the advisory group is that it's modeled after the what we call MLAC, Management Labor Advisory Committee.
Madam Chair, it definitely had that in the background as the legislation was being put together. It does not have the same directives that you'd find in the MLAC legislation,
right,
which is very clear as to responsibilities.
Could you talk about the differences or the different responsibilities?
Particularly, the MLAC committee requires appointment of the committee members by the Senate.
Okay.
By the Senate. That does not happen with this committee. It's simply a group created by the board. One of the key issues there, so that there's definitely legislative involvement in creation of the MLAC makeup, whereas there's not in the advisory committee.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Delaney.
Moving to the bills themselves, Senate Bill 54, our first housekeeping bill. Many times these bills are brought forward by scenarios that we encounter in working with our members. Senate Bill 54 deals with a retirement benefit. When a person retires, we have many different options you can choose. Among the options is to choose to take out, in essence, insurance, to say, I want to provide for my spouse after retirement. If I die, I want my spouse to get an additional benefit, but I want to take out insurance in case my spouse dies before me, or if for some reason there's a divorce between us. If that is to occur, my benefit will pop back up to the higher benefit available to a single individual. The current statute says if that occurs, if that trigger event occurs, the prior death of the spouse or a divorce, the person only gets that pop-up to the higher benefit when they get around to telling PERS about it. And because these are traumatic events, we had in particular a case where a gentleman came forward 3 years later to notify PERS of the death of his wife because it had taken that long for him to get his affairs in order. There was nothing PERS could do. We could not give him retro back to the date of death. We could only give it to him from the time he notified PERS. This bill clarifies that. It says, you took out insurance, you'll get the benefit to the date it occurred. It may take you some years even to get to PERS, but you will get all those dollars. Again, it is just a housekeeping measure to make that clear. In talking to our actuary, he indicated there is no impact on this because he always assumed that the individual would be contacting PERS immediately. Madam Chair, did you want me to stop with each bill and ask for questions or just move on?
That's fine, actually. Any questions on this particular bill? Thank you.
Moving on then to Senate Bill 108. Of our bills, this is probably the more complicated one. It is dealing with interactions between the PERS 238 plan, what you often hear referred to as Tier 1, Tier 2, and the new Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan, what we refer to as OPSERP. With the two plans, we get some interaction because you may have heard of the phrase break in service, mm-hmm. where a Tier 1 or Tier 2 member after 6 month break in service would move into the new plan. So we can actually have people that have benefits in PERS 238 as well as benefits under the OPSERP plan, and that creates some interaction that we had to clarify in this housekeeping bill. One of them deals with an active member. The new plan did not have a definition for an inactive member, so we had to clarify that. Qualifying position. There was a slightly different terminology being used in a qualifying position. Still 600 hours, which is the basis for PERS. But PERS 238 uses a phrase concurrent employment, whereas the new plan used consecutive employment. And while it might seem a minor thing, it, for us administratively, it was quite the issue. So this removes the word concurrent from the old plan and lets us administer the both plans in the same manner, again getting to the bottom line, did they work 600 hours in a calendar year in order to qualify? Lastly, there are two changes with regard to the individual account program. That is the new plan where member 6% contribution is being redirected. The first one, section 10 sub 2, allows the board to establish a minimum benefit that's be paid because this new plan can be paid out as a monthly benefit for a period of up to 20 years. We were concerned that someone may have a very small account balance when they retired and want to get, you know, like a $3 payment paid to them every month for 20 years. It would be quite the issue for us. So we wanted the board to be able to determine a minimum amount for that. And lastly, the subsection 4, a minor issue here. If a person was able to retire under PERS 238 with 30 or out, so say age 50, they have 30 years, they could retire. The IAP at this point says you cannot get a monthly benefit till age 55. So they would have either had to pull all their money out and roll it over or wait 5 years to apply for their IAP, their individual account program dollars. This says if you can retire under PERS ORS 238, you can get a monthly benefit out of your IAP. Any questions on 108?
Any questions? Apparently not.
Okay. It's all crystal clear, Madam Chair.
And the ringer, I'm so pleased.
Moving on to Senate Bill 109. This has to do with earnings to be paid on an estimated benefit. The legislature has provided for PERS to pay an estimated benefit to a member when we cannot pay them within the 92-day time frame. If calculations are difficult or information is difficult to come up with, we can't give them an actual calculation, we'll pay an estimated. When we get around to paying the actual, which might take some months to get that information in, there's a retroactive payment owed to the member. Current statute says you will pay that retroactive amount to the member using the rate established by the board in the prior year. Well, we no longer have a rate. With all the changes to PERS, there are many rates out there. There's a Tier 1, a Tier 2. The new OPSERP plan has a normal cost rate. So this is simply saying the board shall go through rulemaking to establish what rate would be paid on those retroactive estimated payments. If there are no questions on 109?
Apparently not.
I'll move on to 110. 110, this is another one that was brought forward through a case of a member. When a member joins PERS, they can file a designation beneficiary. Say, here's who I want my dollars to go to. There's a little known rule in PERS statute that says, if you terminate PERS, go away, and later come back, you may have thought that that termination ended all rights to the system, but it didn't. We will reactivate your prior beneficiary designation. So we had a particular case where a member married to wife one, named her as his designated beneficiary, leaves PERS, pulls out his money, divorces wife one, marries wife two, returns to PERS, and dies before filling out another form. And so statute directed us to reactivate that original designation beneficiary, so wife one received the dollars rather than wife two.
That's beautiful.
So if he just didn't divorce wife one and kept wife one and wife two, would this be a
problem? That would be another committee.
Not for you, Senator Atkins. We sure, Atkinson, we sure you can handle both of them.
So the Senate Bill 110
said, keeping up.
Senate Bill 110 simply states that if you leave PERS, that cancels everything and you have to file a new designation when you return. And if you haven't filed anything, if you return without having filed one, you default to the regular spouse, child, next of kin listing.
Mr. Laney, it also occurs to me that the beneficiary designation probably should have been changed in the divorce proceedings. Just a comment.
And actually, Senator, to that, there was statute passed in last session to direct that to PERS, that when it is changed in a divorce decree, that we will take that into consideration.
Okay.
Well, this is fun to wake up to on a Thursday.
Moving on then to our final bill, Senate Bill 111. This is simply to clarify, and actually I will say that of our bills, this is our most important one because it deals with the tax qualification of the plan. It clarifies what has the legislature created. With the PERS Tier 1, Tier 2, the OPSERP, do we have a single retirement system or do we have multiple systems? This bill clarifies that there is a single retirement system with multiple programs within it. Tier 1 is a program, Tier 2 is a program, OPSERP is a program, IAP is a program. The reason that's important is we want to be able to move employer assets to cover liabilities wherever they may occur within the system. This bill, and you'll see there's an amendment that has been introduced as well to this, because our attorneys missed one line, but our fiscal folks who have to actually work with this stuff caught it, makes clear, it removes language that would suggest that dollars cannot be moved, that they have to stay within a particular program. And again, I say this is important, especially for those employers that have made bond payments. The bond payments have done very well. It is actually possible that they could pay off their liabilities and have a surplus within the fund because of those bond payments, say, for Tier 1, and we would want to be able to move assets to cover liabilities that could begin to accrue under the OPSERP plan. This bill makes all that possible and makes it clear to the federal authorities what we've created.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Laney? None?
Madam Chair, I might just summarize by saying that, you know, we always try to reserve the right to get smarter. And what you see in front of you today is our attempt to get smarter, both from experience with individual constituents as well as with experience with now starting to operate a multiple component plan. On that last bill, I would point out that the state of Oregon was very fortunate in terms of their decision to issue some $2 billion in pension obligation bonds. And from the state's perspective, they're almost 100% funded with those bond proceeds in the Tier 1, Tier 2 component. And should we see investment returns that exceed the assumption, they would be one that would want to then be able to move some of those assets over against liabilities in the new OPSERP plan. So for the state of Oregon, this is a critical clarification that we'd appreciate.
Mr. Clear, Mr. Delaney, I assume that would only happen at such time that in the Tier 1, Tier 2 programs, that those are adequately funded. It's a situation where there's actual reserves,
right,
to, and you're shifting reserves to unfunded. Okay.
I'm sure that's correct.
Sarah Atkinson?
Nope.
Okay.
Move to work session. I'll move on.
All right. Thank you very much. I'm going to close the public hearing unless anyone in the audience is wishing to testify. Open a work session on Senate Bills. Let's see. 54, 108, 109, 110, and 111.
Madam Chair,
Senator Atkinson,
can we move them all? Because I think we need to go one at a time because some need amendments, don't they?
Yes, Senate Bill 111 needs an amendment.
Madam Chair, I would move that we pass Senate Bill 54 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson moves Senate Bill 54 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none? So ordered.
Madam Chair.
Senator Atkinson.
I'd just like to hear you say, Senator Atkinson. I move Senate Bill 108 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved Senate Bill 108 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, motion passes. Senator Atkinson.
Madam Chair.
Senator Atkinson.
I would
say it over and over again.
Senate Bill 109 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved Senate Bill 109 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Ringo.
How do we keep Senator Atkinson under control?
Yes, how do we?
How do we?
That is a very good question to which I do not know the answer.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
What bill number are we on, 109? We're on 109. Any objections? Hearing none, the motion passes. Senator Atkinson.
I would move Senate Bill 110 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and make a motion that Senator Ringo carry it.
Senator Atkinson has moved Senate Bill 110 to the Senate floor with the recommendation that Senator Ringo carry this bill. Is there any discussion?
I will not be voting for that, Madam Chair.
Senator Ringo, you will not be voting for that?
No, I'm not going to carry the bill.
Okay.
Do you like me to amend my motion?
It was a recommendation. It wasn't a motion.
Correct.
So, on the motion, we're voting to move 110 to the Senate floor. Any further discussion on the merits of the motion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Shields.
I just wanted people to know I was here this morning, too, so I thought I'd say something.
Thank you, Senator Shields.
But I really might make it relevant, and I know that would be rather extraordinary considering where we've gone so far in this work session. But on each of these bills, it's been said at the end, no opposition to this bill, Legislative Advisory Committee. I'm assuming that all these fine people that are listed on page one had substantive conversations about each and every one of these, and I'm looking out there to see that they're all shaking their heads and that it really means that they arrived at that kind of consensus.
Thank you
for all those nodding heads. That makes me feel better.
That is my understanding, that organization had substantive conversations regarding these bills, mm-hmm. and that while they may not be thrilled and hugging yeah. these bills, that at least folks are not opposing them.
Well, that, just to see that kind of consent out there, that's entered in the public testimony as far as I'm concerned. Lots of nodding heads.
Any objection to Senate Bill 110? Seeing none, so ordered.
Madam Chair.
Senator Atkinson.
I'd like to ask one amendments to Senate Bill 111.
Senator Atkinson has moved the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 111. Is there any discussion?
We're dashing right through these things.
Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing none, the motion passes.
Madam Chair, I move the bill as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Sir?
With the recommendation that
No.
Rules Committee implore what Director Cleary has said, which would be to reserve the right to get smarter over time.
Senator Atkinson has moved Senate Bill 111 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? No. Any objection to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, the motion passes, and Senator Atkinson will carry these bills.
No, he won't.
You don't want to?
Ted will.
There you go.
That's a great idea. Okay. Seeing that we have just lost all our committee members and there's no further business to come before the committee, we are officially adjourned. Thank you all very much. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Thank you.